Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up over the next half hour, we go to the Synod Hall, where hundreds of Catholic bishops are sharing experiences and ideas for the new evangelization. And among them, an ecumenical partner from the World Evangelical Alliance. We hear from the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem about the challenges facing Christians in his region and have a report from our correspondent. Plus, the Secretary of the Vatican Council for Interfaith Relations speaks out on how religion can be a catalyst for justice and peace. The Synod of Bishops on the New Evangelization is into its second week of deliberations on the transmission of the Christian faith in today's world. More than 250 participants began their 11th General Congregation on Monday in the presence of Pope Benedict XVI. Well, besides the Catholic Church leaders attending the proceedings, there are also 15 fraternal delegates from churches and ecclesial communities not in communion with the Catholic Church. Their presence is a sign that the problems facing the proclamation of the gospel are universal to all Christians, not just to Catholics.
It's very good to be here to hear the commitment to evangelization. Of course, for evangelicals, the heart of being an evangelical is a commitment to world evangelization. And to sit and listen to the interventions, the topics that are being discussed, I think are really vital for not only for the Catholic Church, but also for the global church as well.
That's Dr. Jeff Tunnicliffe, the Secretary General for the World Evangelical Alliance. He is the first representative of the WEA to attend the Synod.
I think the strong focus on Christology, on the person of Christ, I think that's been very encouraging and very impressive. But also recognizing the context in which the Church exists in many different parts of the world, and particularly parts of the world where the Church is in a minority, and how the Church is facing that challenge, I think, have been very, very encouraging. Looking at the areas of the new media, you know, how do we use media to be effective in our communication of the gospel? I think that's also been an indication. But also dealing with some of the struggles as well, and the context of pain where the Church has been instrumental in that pain, not just in the Catholic Church, but beyond. And how do you deal with that reality and the gospel being relevant and compassionate towards those who have been damaged by the Church, I think has also been a very important conversation that I've heard.
You're talking about the many points of unity, the many areas in which the different Christian communities are seeking to tackle together some of the problems that people face. I've also heard some of the bishops here complaining about some of the newer Christian communities and the way they are trying to perhaps poach the faithful from their traditional churches. How do you see these areas of conflict, if you like?
Well, it is a challenge for us, and depending on which part of the world you're in. And the truth is that the evangelical community is growing around the world today. We represent over 650 million Christians. And so, of course, there will be tensions in some places. I think one of the things that we continue to fall back on is the joint document that we signed with the Catholic Church and the World Council of Churches last year on the area of Christian witness in a multi-religious world and developing best practices. And so we encourage all Christians to live in unity and respect one another. But we also recognize that people make their own decisions and they want to express their faith perhaps in different ways. And so I think we need to allow the freedom to do that as well. I think the big challenge is how do we face together as a church issues of radical secularism or fundamentalist religion where all churches are under attack. And I think those are the things that we can come together around and be united around as we face some of the bigger challenges in society.
Would you like to see the focus on ecumenism working closer together within the very different church context? Would you like to see that as a more significant part of this synod?
Well, I think there's, much of the non-Christian world looks at the church as one church in many ways. They don't differentiate between the denominations and that. So, but the truth is we have areas that we can work together on in nation building, working for the common good, issues around building strong families, dealing with some of the great challenges in our world today, whether it's poverty or the ecology. I think those things that we can really work together on, bringing a moral conversation into the public square, I think we can also work together on as well. So I think we can, around some very practical areas, be working together.
Dr. Jeff Tunnicliffe is the Secretary General for the World Evangelical Alliance. The Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Fuad Twal, was in the Synod Hall 2 years ago for the Synod of Bishops for the Middle East. Since that synod ended in 2010, the Middle East and North Africa have been in the throes of the Arab Spring. He shares with Philippa Hitchin some of his concerns for the small Christian community in the Holy Land in this context.
Living in Jerusalem and living with all these walls and living with our divisions as Christians, any good faith and evangelism must be open to the others with more bridges and less walls. And our faith must bring us to be beside the others despite all the problems that we can have. And now in the Middle East, when we see all the problems that we are living, I can say the Christians and we pastors with them, we are a little bit afraid, really afraid. And that's why our attention, our care is how to gather our small flock, how to keep it, how to protect it. It is something which are just gathering our people instead to have the courage to go outside, to preach outside, to invade the others. We are invaded a little bit by this fear, by the threat, by the situation, by the politics, and we are keeping ourselves in a small cycle till point that we are thinking even a little bit about the rights, more rights of the small community. We are a bit thinking only how to keep our right, how to keep our small family, how to keep our small church, instead to be open and to go outside.
You're talking about, firstly, the new evangelization must start again from Jerusalem. You believe in a very physical way, don't you, that people should come actually to Jerusalem as pilgrims to see, to experience, to walk in the footsteps of our Lord?
Absolutely. I will make a call in this intervention, asking the bishops, all the colleagues here present, to come with their seminaries, their priests, their community, and not to be afraid. Come on to see what we call the living stones and encourage us, share with us our fear, our joys, our aspiration, share with us the prayer. We need a prayer to come back to prayer.
The second point, you're talking about walls and bridges in a very difficult context that you're living today. It's very difficult, isn't it, to keep out of politics and yet try and be present in the difficult situation of your people there.
Yeah, besides this situation that we are still living the same as before, gives me more problems, because even speaking with the others, it seems that the focus for the moment is no more on the Holy Land. It is focused in Syria and elsewhere, when the situation is the same, if it is not worse than before. But it seems that in the Holy Land, the abnormal is becoming normal, and nobody speaks about us. Our situation doesn't attract any attention from newspaper, of mass media, and so on. And that's one problem more that I am living for the moment. So I'm trying to say, okay, the situation is difficult, very difficult in Syria. We have many refugees, but at the same time, we don't forget what we are living in Jerusalem, in the Holy Land.
How much do you think Pope Benedict's recent visit to Lebanon, his presentation of the post-synodal document on the Middle East, how much do you think those kind of calls for greater dialogue, greater openness, will affect at all, if any, the political situation?
Well, I think in the beginning, the speech of His Holiness were good speech for all the world, not only for the Middle East. And I think that at the end, he came down to mention Syria and the violence in the region and the neighborhood. And we were happy at the end more than at the beginning. The beginning, the speech can be said everywhere, even in Australia. Even the same apostolic exhortation, it is not the same as we prepared with the 44 proposals and with the message that we give. I think maybe we were too much concrete, about the situation, about Palestine, about occupation, demolition of houses, and so on and so on. You find nothing of this in the apostolic exhortation. Okay, it speaks about the communion, then the bishops, the family, so on. I think to know better the situation, better to go back to the first proposals, the 34, and to the message. It was more concrete. This one is good. Can we give this exhortation even to Europe, to Asia? It is okay, it is good, but not necessary about our very difficult and acute, dire situation that we are living.
Do you think it's fair to say that the rest of the church finds it hard to understand the reality that you're living there in the Middle East?
It is not only hard, it is painful, because now speaking with the bishops, with the colleagues, they don't know about the situation. They are reading newspaper and the news, and we know that all the mass media is under control, especially when we speak about Syria. They know nothing, absolutely. When we all we can say, all the religious leaders, we are agreed on one some things, about the situation, about the danger. The others just listening, and it is amazing. They don't know nothing. Now that we are living a war of information, I can understand their ignorance, absolutely.
How do you think you can make your very difficult situation better understood? How can you bring it home better to people outside the Middle East?
Well, we have our travel outside, our interventions outside, our speech outside, visits outside. In the same time, when they come to Jerusalem as pilgrimage, they must be in touch with us, ask the local authority, whether the Patriarchate, whether the Apostolic Nunciature, but they must be in touch with the local authority, Christian authority, to know better the situation. Otherwise, we go on in the same case without any contribution. Yeah.
Your third point is that of fear. Fear of being such a tiny flock in the midst of such a large Muslim Middle East. This makes it very difficult for you to be able to evangelize effectively, doesn't it? What are you proposing? How can you get over that sense of fear?
Even the pilgrims, when they come, they give us this sense of communion that we are not alone. Now, if we are a minority, the day that we have thousands and millions of pilgrims, Christians, we become majority. That doesn't give any complex for this. In the same time, I want to say about these Christian confessions and rites. They are more attached to the rite than the dogma than to the Christ, in one meaning. I want to say the rite is okay, it's very good, is patrimony, is richness, but it is the rite, no more. So this way to prayer. So if we can be a little bit more open and not look only how to survive, but to look how we can make more outside, how we can evangelize the others in one way or another. In fact, in the Holy Land, within the Patriarchate, we have a lot of institutions, though we are 2-3% only, but in the same time, we have many hospitals, many schools, many universities, many. We are not so poor in one way to evangelize. We have many means. If really we believe in what we are doing, living. Going back to the first community, I will say that they used to have causa, one cause, to which they were ready to defend, to speak, to die if necessary. My question, whether we have a cause now, or we have a monotonous life, monotonous Christian life, monotonous Christian ritual life, whether we have a cause to which we are ready to more sacrifices, even to die if necessary. And this is the situation.
What are you doing to try and encourage lay people also to identify with this cause, to be able to be more vocal in their needs and the problems of the church in your region?
Well, at the same time, we are doing our best. At the same time, we need absolutely the you, the others, the Universal Church, the Catholic Church, the pilgrims. We need more solidarity with us in this. We need more people who feel co-responsible with us about this community, about this land, about this patriarchate, about this church, not to be alone in this very, very huge mission. We are nothing. We are 2%. So whether we have all the church with us, start again from Jerusalem, with Jerusalem, for Jerusalem, and we will feel strong. Otherwise, we will be what we are.
And a warm thanks there to the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Fuad Twal. Well, as many of you know by now, Philippa Hitchin is our special Synod correspondent up in the Synod Hall. She has been gauging the atmosphere there as the working sessions gather pace. She shares with us some impressions of Monday's sessions.
Up in the Vatican Synod Hall, it's not all about listening to endless speeches on the problems of the Church in different parts of the world. Sometimes participants get free gifts. Pope Benedict on Monday gave them a book about the 2001 Synod on the role of bishops as servants of the gospel. Sometimes they get to see films. This evening they're invited to stay late for a film about bell ringing in Europe, featuring interviews with the Ecumenical Patriarch, the Archbishop of Canterbury, and the Holy Father himself. On Saturday, the Synod Fathers were treated to another short film from YouTube, a four-year-old fear-mongering presentation of statistics attempting to show how Islam is conquering Europe and the rest of the world. Scary music, stark white words against a black background, and the warning that dropping fertility rates in Europe, plus high birth rates among immigrant Muslim families, means our children face a threatening world of Islamic domination in the very near future. Just why one of the curial cardinals chose to show this piece of anti-Islamic propaganda is quite unclear. No one seems to know who made the video, and the BBC produced an article shortly after showing many of the facts were at best exaggerated and at worst completely made up. Was it to provoke more animated debate than is normally heard in the August Synod Hall? It certainly seemed to do that, with other cardinals questioning the facts and suggesting bishops would do better to consult the work of the Council of European Bishops' Conferences, which discusses relations with Islam regularly and produced an important message on interfaith relations in 2008. There's no doubt that many church leaders here do feel threatened by Islam, by the fervour of its followers, by the lack of freedom to convert to Christianity, and by the fundamentalist minorities who can make life hard for Christians in many African, Asian, or Middle Eastern nations. But as plenty of participants are pointing out, an open, honest dialogue in love and respect for others is the only effective way to avoid conflict and promote a greater understanding between peoples of different religious beliefs. Certainly a solid faith formation is essential to begin any genuine interfaith dialogue. But as Cardinal Toron, head of the Vatican's Council for Interfaith Relations, reminded the Synod Fathers, God is at work in each individual. Thus, a believer of another faith is not an adversary, but rather a pilgrim on the same journey towards the truth. From the Vatican Synod Hall, I'm Philippa Hitchin.
The Secretary of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue, Father Miguel Ayuso, says the Pope's remarks on justice and religious freedom on his recent trip to Lebanon inspired his discourse to participants at the Istanbul World Forum, October 14th. The theme of the forum was justice and the construction of a new global order. In this interview with me, Father Ayuso explains the aim of his participation in the Istanbul Forum and the essential role of religious freedom to a just society.
The central theme of this World Forum has been justice, addressed under six different perspectives: global order, politics, history, economic justice, art and media, and religion. So through the Apostolic Nunciatura in Turkey, I received this invitation in order to give the voice of the Catholic Church in this major event with regard to religion and peace.
So that presupposes justice?
Of course. In fact, I reminded the participants that justice and peace seek the good of one and all, and for this reason, they demand order and truth. So when one is threatened, both falter. When justice is offended, peace is also placed in jeopardy. So the root causes of many of the problems affecting the peaceful coexistence and development of all today, as we are well aware, are inequality and injustice. But the role of religion is as a catalyst and basis for justice and a promoter of an equality, which is the new global order, close to the heart of all of us.
So then, what is the role of religion?
Indeed, religion has a role to play for the well-being and well-ordering of society, although it would be wrong to limit religion to a mere social role. Unfortunately, I may say that the role of religion in modern society is often misunderstood, unappreciated, and even criticized as a source of the problems and conflicts in modern society. I remember that in his address to the representatives of British society, Pope Benedict XVI, during his visit to Great Britain in 2010, noted that the distorted forms of religion, such as sectarianism and fundamentalism, can create social problems. Religion, properly understood and properly appreciated, according to Pope Benedict, has an important role to play in political debate, which is to help purify and shed light upon the application of reason to the discovery of objective moral principles. Therefore, religion is not a problem, but a vital contributor to the national conversation.
And what is the contribution of religion to the national conversation about justice and social justice?
Religion has a role in contributing to the national conversation of any given society. That conversation needs to engage with all the complexities that societies face in the modern world. Justice is a divine attribute, and religious teaching certainly contributes to the reflection on the right ordering of relationships. In other words, social justice. Catholic tradition, however, maintains that justice is accessible by means of human reason to all men and women of goodwill, both religious and non-religious. Pope Benedict XVI has spoken about the complementary relationship between religion and reason. As religion may need to be tempered by the light of reason, there are times that reason needs to be purified and corrected by religion.
As Pope Benedict XVI stated at London's Westminster Hall in September 2010, the central question at the heart of a just society is discovering the ethical foundation for political choices. If the state does not have the last word, then it stands to reason that in a just society there must be other voices.
Yes. For justice requires that all persons should be left in the free enjoyment of their rights. In its most simple and profound definition, justice is to give to another what is due to him. Our question is, therefore, who or what can hold the state to account to ensure that it acts justly? The question is not political but moral, although the answer will require political choices. An individual society determines its own polity and so holds itself accountable to objective moral norms in accordance with what is right and wrong, determining the most appropriate instruments to measure what ought to be done, justice, against what is being done.
So how do you go about this?
Religion, therefore, has a role in political debate, not in providing concrete political solutions, which lies outside the competence of religion, but to remind society of the objective moral norms at the basis of justice and the just society. And society must allow religion to have its proper voice in the public square.
And what do you mean by the voice of religion in the public square?
Well, that religion cannot be understood as a merely private matter. A free and just society is not threatened by allowing individuals to speak the convictions of their hearts in openness, sincerity, and truth. Religious freedom is at the heart of the social project and is necessary for social justice. Religious freedom, therefore, is the fundamental basis of all other freedoms. Pope John Paul II, in addressing the General Assembly of the United Nations in 1995, when he cited the role of religious freedom in helping bring about the collapse of European communism, made a profound statement about the power of the moral voice of religion to hold tyranny to account.
How important an issue, then, is religious freedom?
In his teaching on religious freedom, the Second Vatican Council says that the human person has a right to religious freedom, that this right means that everyone should be immune from coercion on the part of individuals, social groups, and every human power in acting on religious convictions, and that this right exercise in private or in public, alone or in association with others. So since religion is not a mere private matter of the individual, the freedom from coercion in matters of beliefs for the individual also apply in public or in association with others, so that the state has no right to coerce or attempt to control the internal life of a religious community, to determine its creed, or to use it as a means of social control. In 1979, I think Pope John Paul II, in addressing the General Assembly of the United Nations, described religious freedom as the first of human rights.
Now, in continuity with the teaching of the Second Vatican Council and the teaching of Pope John Paul II, Pope Benedict XVI continues, it seems to me, to champion religious freedom as the basis of all other freedoms.
Indeed, for the celebration of the World Day of Peace in 2011, Pope Benedict XVI dedicated his annual message to the theme of religious freedom. And it is worth recalling what he said there. To deny and arbitrarily restrict this freedom is to foster a reductive vision of the human person. To eclipse the public role of religion is to create a society which is unjust inasmuch as it fails to take account of the true nature of the human person. It is to stifle the growth of the authentic and lasting peace of the whole human family. For this reason, I remember how the Pope said, "I implore all men and women of goodwill to renew their commitment to building a world where all are free to profess their religion or faith and to express their love of God with all their heart, with all their soul, and with all their mind." During his address to political and religious leaders and representatives of the world of culture last month of September in Beirut, Pope Benedict XVI underlined the importance of religious freedom. He said that it cannot be forgotten that religious freedom is the basic right on which many other rights depend. The freedom to profess and practice one's religion without danger to life and liberty must be possible to everyone.
So you would say this World Forum has been a positive endeavor?
I think so, yes. Inasmuch as all of us renewed our commitment with a sense of shared responsibility for the promotion of greater social justice through religious freedom towards a lasting and secure peace in the world. Echoing what Pope Benedict XVI said during his visit to Lebanon, I may conclude by saying that thoughts of peace, words of peace, and acts of peace create an atmosphere of respect, honesty, and cordiality where faults and offenses can be truthfully acknowledged as a means of advancing together on the path of reconciliation. The Pope added by saying, "May political and religious leaders reflect on this." I think that this World Forum has been a special event that has contributed to political and religious leaders to reflect on this essential point.
And a warm thanks there to Father Miguel Ángel Ayuso Guixó, the Secretary of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue. And I'm Tracy McClure. Laudator Jesus Christus.